It should come as no surprise that I love a strong leading lady. And no lady led the way in the literary investigative field of journalism quite like the amazing Nellie Bly. She endeavored to tell the tales of the marginalized, the unseen, the overlooked, as well as those who dared to take a stand. We explore her encounter with just such a group in our next tale from our live show, More from the Secret Files of Nellie Bly. It's a story we call The Band of Mercy. You can decide for yourself if it's a story too spectacular to believe. The following was taped live in New York City on Sunday, February 24th, 2019.
Now, Mr. Brisbane, is there not one more lost item left for us this evening?
Yes, there is. And it is perhaps the strangest story I know of. I am very cautious in making such a claim, but in all of my many years as a newspaperman, I never came across anything odder than what you're about to hear now. Nellie Bly's story of the Band of Mercy, as it appeared in the New York World on New Year's Eve in 1893, was bizarre enough on its own merits. But what no one knows is that the published story only just scratched the surface. It all began when Nellie picked up a lead based on the following account. It took place on West 125th Street of Manhattan in the fall of 1893. A policeman named Joseph Connolly began to shadow an odd-looking woman named Mrs. Grace Georgia DeVede.
Officer?
Ma'am?
It's not like I haven't noticed, officer.
Am I following you for the last 15 minutes? Then you won't mind me asking you.
Asking me what?
That basket you're carrying there.
Yes?
Would you mind opening the basket, ma'am?
It's my private property. Nothing for you to see, officer.
Ma'am, I'm a busy fellow with many other things to do. Please show me what's inside your basket.
Why should I do that?
Because I saw you do something quite nasty earlier. Nasty and cruel.
And what would that be?
Open the basket.
No, I won't.
Then I'll have to arrest you.
Fine. Fine.
Mother of God. What would make you do such a thing?
Inside the basket were the bodies of five dead cats. Soon after, Alexander Adamson, the managing editor of the World at that time, called Nellie Bly to his office.
Officer Connolly says that he was following the vagrant woman because he observed her killing a cat earlier that day.
And how did she kill the animal?
Well, according to what Officer Connolly says, she used a rag with chloroform to kill it.
But why?
When the deranged woman was taken into custody, she claimed it was an act of mercy. And that she had the permission and blessing of the SPCA, and that she is, in fact, a great lover of animals.
Oh, none of this makes any sense at all. Please tell me they gave this person a lengthy sentence.
Oh, on the contrary. Somehow, a distinguished attorney named LeDuc appeared in court on her behalf and was able to have everything reduced to a $10 fine. She's back out on the streets. And the SPCA, of course, has denied any association with this woman.
Oh, I shouldn't be surprised. But I can already tell that some nagging questions still linger.
So go out and ask those questions. And get me some answers, Miss Bly.
All I needed was your encouragement, Mr. Adamson.
Since when do you need anyone's encouragement, Miss Bly?
I was just trying to be nice, Mr. Adamson.
Ah. Well, don't let it happen again. Go see what you can dig up, and maybe there's a good story to be found there.
I spent 10 days looking for Mrs. Georgia Grace DeVede, the head, promoter, and originator of the Band of Mercy, a strange circle of cat catchers. No romance filled with the most striking characters could ever equal the members of the Band of Mercy. Mrs. Grace Georgia DeVede, who is known as a fanatical worshiper of all things humane, is not easy to find. I spent several days in diligent search for her, invoked the aid of the police and SPCA, was given a score of addresses and visited each and every one, only to be told that Mrs. David was not known there. But I did not give up, and was rewarded at last by striking a clue which relentlessly pursued led me up the narrow, dark stairs of a tall tenement house, straight to Mrs. David's door.
Who are you? How did you find this address?
I am a reporter for The World.
What do you want?
I'm writing a story about cat catching in New York City for the Sunday World. I was told you are the person to talk to.
How do I know you weren't sent by the police or the SPCA?
The SPCA is your enemy? I thought you claimed in court that you had the blessing of the Berg Society.
Yeah, they used to be the friends of this Band of Mercy. And ever since the good founder, Mr. Henry Berg, has passed, they have grown to be too fancy and too big for their britches. Now they have had our cattery shut down, and they are up to all sorts of tricks to find out what the cat catchers are doing. But hey, how did you know I was in court?
I am a reporter. It's my business to learn such things. Mrs. David, how is it that you allow yourself to live this way, under such poor conditions?
I suppose I am mad. Some people say so. For a woman to care nothing for her appearance or how she lives is a sure sign of madness. I confess I don't care for life. I only care for horses and dogs and cats. All dumb animals are my friends. I love them to such an extent and am so devoted to their cause that I have become estranged from people. I have nothing in common with anything except animals, and them I love. Why, I love a horse better than any relative I ever had. My relatives are selfish. Horses never are. Poor, meek slaves they are. Slaves to cruel man.
You worship animals, so, but you kill cats.
Well, not anymore. Not really. We are not allowed. But when we did, it was out of mercy. Hence our name, the Band of Mercy. We put down stray cats that were sick, injured, maimed, mistreated, left to starve in the cold.
Describe to me your method of catching and killing cats.
We would dress in old clothes, generally wore a Macintosh, and with our bottle of chloroform and our basket lined with oilcloth, we would start forth. We would go on the east side in the slums, where homeless cats live. We would put some meat and catnip on the ground and call, "Kitty, kitty, kitty, kitty." And they would come from all directions. Cats go crazy over catnip, you see, and will travel any distance to get it. Yeah, well, when we had them about us, we would set our baskets on the ground and, opening our chloroform, saturate a sponge and slip it into the basket. Then grab a cat quickly by the back of the neck, lift the lid of the basket, put the cat in, slap down the lid, and hold it. Then the basket would shake. Kitty, kitty trying to escape. And then it would go, meow, meow. Hush, kitty, hush, kitty. One of our members would say, "You are going to Jesus, kitty. Meow, hush, kitty. Your soul is going to the Lord. Meow, meow. Kitty has gone to God. Amen." And it was all over.
How many cats do you suppose you killed?
50 a night was nothing. I know we averaged 500 a month.
Wasn't your chloroform expensive?
Rather. A 4-pound bottle cost $2.20. It would kill 60 cats. Yeah, we always got our chloroform from an Eastside druggist. I don't want to tell his name, for it might hurt his business. He had no idea what we wanted it for, but we used such quantities that once he said, "You buy so much chloroform, you must run a dying establishment." "Yes," I replied. "A dying establishment." "A dying establishment. That's too good."
Well, how many cats do you suppose there are in New York?
It is difficult to say, but we estimate there are 1,000 born every day.
Did you know that certain members of your band were in the habit of visiting their friends merely for the purpose of carrying off their pet cats?
Yes, I knew it. And I used to tell them not to do it, that it would get us into trouble. But they had such a mania for killing them to spare the grandchildren that I could do nothing with them.
Well, it's a wonder you remained with them when you knew all you did about the actions of some of them.
Well, they knew I'd never betray them as long as there was a bottle of chloroform and a cat.
And you are the founder of the Band of Mercy.
The founder, yes. But there are others above me whom I answer to.
Such as?
Miss Caroline Ewan.
Ewan? She's not a relation of the Ewans of Fifth Avenue, is she?
She is.
She is your associate?
Seems implausible, eh? But she is. Oh, yes, she is. Can you believe it? Pointy-nosed dewdrop of a little heiress dons a smock with the rest of us and ventures with her basket into the alleyways after midnight. Who do you think pays for the chloroform? Who do you think bankrolls the Band of Mercy?
What a strange and awful band was that Band of Mercy. There is Mrs. DeVede, who admits that she is mad. She beggared herself for animals. For their sake, she lives like a pauper, dresses like a beggar, and knows no time for sleep, no hour for food. But it is undeniable. She also gets a sickening pleasure from the killing of cats. Fascinatingly, she was an intimate friend of Henry Berg, the late founder of the SPCA Society, and he gave her the first bottle of chloroform. Well, this I know, for I have seen and read his letters to her. She's clever and well-read, very well-read, I must say. But she is mad. She confesses it, and I endorse her opinion. But what to say of her association with Miss Caroline Ewan? Miss Ewan lives in a magnificent house on 48th Street, adjoining Fifth Avenue. She is one of three sisters set to inherit the fortune left by her father, commonly reported to be worth $20 million. Miss Ewan's family are society people, devoted to such amusements and diversions as well-bred society offers. But Miss Caroline Ewan's mind has traveled where society does not know the way. I know this because I spoke with her myself. I prepared myself for a subject who would keep me at bay with a vast array of denials. But instead...
Oh, yes, yes, it's true. All true.
Really? But how... Why would you associate yourself with a person like...
I am a devoted lover of cats. So is Mrs. DeVede. Oh,
I can't tell what she loves more, cats or killing cats.
It's so easy to judge what we don't understand, isn't it, Miss Bly?
Help me understand, then.
Oh, it's quite simple. Before we were cruelly shut down by the SPCA, Mrs. DeVede and I owned and operated a wonderful home for cats on 185th Street and Amsterdam Avenue.
Which was used for the killing of cats.
No, we boarded and cared for cats at the home.
And you paid for all of this?
Oh, yes, I lent some financial support. Oh, but we did have some society friends of mine make generous benefactions towards the home, which was greatly needed and appreciated.
I have heard accounts that wealthy friends of yours used your cattery to board their own pets, and those animals were never seen again. Is there any truth to that?
Where did you hear such a thing? Oh, there is nothing crueler than rumor and innuendo.
I suppose not. So you ran the cattery by day?
And went cat-catching by night. I am unashamed to say so. It's hard to picture, isn't it? Someone of my background putting on old rags, armed with only a basket and a bottle of chloroform, climbing fences and walls into the filthiest slums in this city, all for one common cause. A righteous cause. You may print everything I just said. I want the world to know. I regret nothing. I apologize for nothing. I believe eventually a day will come when people will understand. I believe I will live to see that day.
Miss Ewan, why does it seem in your case that once you start killing a thing, it becomes hard to stop?
Mercy is righteous. I will never tire of being merciful toward the meek.
So you are positive no boarding cats were killed in the home?
I'm positive. The Henry Berg Circle of the King's Daughters of the Midnight Band of Mercy would never tarnish the reputation in such a way.
Miss Ewan was very generous with her time. And all the while, I marveled at the splendor of her surroundings. But I left her apartments, feeling like a person who is still feeling unsated after a great meal. I tracked down and interviewed as many persons as I could find who had even the slightest association with the Band of Mercy. And I found that the cat-catching band welcomes all sorts of women from all walks of life. Miss Rackner is a German washerwoman. Miss Stone is a piano teacher and a cultured woman, a friend of Miss Ewan. Miss Robbins is a French teacher. Miss Harmon, a dressmaker. Mrs. Banna is a milliner, and so on. Each one of these women on the surface seems completely kind and personable. But to talk to them about a particular subject, and before long, a troubling, peculiar form of madness seems to wash over their faces. There was still one more woman I needed to speak to. Mrs. Van Orden, the former matron of the cat home, but she was the one person who refused to speak to me at all. But I was able to persuade her husband, Ben, to speak with me, with the help of a few crisp dollar bills which I folded and put into his shirt pocket. Judging by the squalor in which they lived, I could tell they sorely needed it.
I'll tell you why she won't talk to you, miss. She's afraid.
Afraid of what exactly, Mr. Van Orden? Retaliation of some kind? From Miss Ewan? Mrs. David?
Yeah, to some degree. They're all a strange bunch, ain't they?
Well, they sure are. But what else is she afraid of?
Oh, a number of things.
Such as?
My Sarah is a good woman. A decent woman. She didn't know what was really going on with that Band of Mercy until she was in it too deeply, you know?
Oh, I don't. Please, tell me.
For one, it is true. Them rich folks that were bringing their cats to the home for boarding, them folks never got their pets back.
So they killed them?
Yeah. And while they collected boarding fees from these folks, too.
But that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know it don't. But that's what she says happened, and my Sarah is not one for fibbing.
Why would they do such a thing? One can't do something like that for very long without getting caught eventually.
Well, I know why.
You do?
Yep.
Tell me then. All right. This is my last dollar, though.
Thank you. Them rich folks didn't bring their cats of theirs into the home for room and board, you know?
They didn't?
No. They knew perfectly well that their cats were going to be, sacrificed.
What?
The fees for room and board? Those weren't fees. They were dues.
Dues?
Yeah. You know, sort of like the money collected in a Sunday church basket. Except they ain't no Christians, or Jews, or Hindus. Ain't no religion like them folks.
I can't believe this.
Now, you don't have to, but I know it's true. They were trying to sacrifice enough of them cats so it would bring back... How do I say it?
What are you trying to say?
Well, maybe it's malarkey, but those cuckoo birds all believe in it. The cat home is also a temple of some kind. You shut up now.
Have you seen this temple?
Just once, by accident. It's in a hidden room concealed in the back. It gave me an awful feeling. You ever been in a room like that before? Where you get those feelings of, like, what do you call it? Deja vu?
Deja vu.
Yeah, that. Well, anyways, there's this big white thing that I guess is supposed to be the altar, and statues of cats everywhere, and this big round sign hanging over the altar with a big blue eye against a gold background. Weird. Weird. It's weird.
A blue eye on a golden background.
Yeah, that's what I said. A gold eye on a blue... I mean a blue eye on a gold background.
When I met Miss Ewan, she was wearing a brooch.
With a blue eye on a gold background? Oh, yeah. She's the queen loony bird.
Thank you, Ben. I must go at once. I raced immediately to the site of the former cat home on 185th Street and Amsterdam Avenue. The hour was getting late, and I had precious little sunlight left if I wanted to take a peek inside the boarded-up building. The place was quite neglected. There was no watchman present, so it was very easy for me to slip inside. Immediately upon entering, there was a horrible stench, like nothing I've ever encountered. It was not like the smell of death, which I have experienced before. This was something else. I had to cover my face with a handkerchief. It was so overpowering. I carefully creeped past floors strewn with rubble, shattered tiles, turned over washtub basins, and other assorted trash. I found what I judged to be the death room, and it made me feel extremely ill, but I pressed on. And when suddenly I heard... What a sound! Oh, I was shaken to the core with terror. But somehow I found the courage to go closer to the source of the strange, beastly sound. I took my pistol from my bag and made my approach. The head was coming from behind a door. I got close to the door. Closer. Closer.
What are you doing in here?
Oh, officer.
What are you doing in here, miss?
I'm Nellie Bly of the New York World. I'm on an investigation.
Not this time, you're not Nellie Bly. You're on your way out of here and know what you're doing. You understand? You're trespassing on private property. You have to get your scoop some other way.
But, officer, there's something in this place. A dangerous wild animal, perhaps? Didn't you hear that growling just now?
I heard nothing. Now, you're going to leave with me, or do I have to place you under arrest? Come on now. Shoo! Shoo! This ain't Blackwell's Island, lady. Get out! Out now! Out!
What was that sound? More importantly, what horrors lie ahead for our Nellie Bly? We'll find out in just a moment. This episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. And here to tell you about his delicious experience is our own FMT co-creator, Gustavo Rodriguez.
Oh, and a delicious experience it was for sure.
Well, I heard you just got your HelloFresh box of goodies yesterday and already cooked up your first meal. Gus, man, tell me, what is this HelloFresh business?
Well, HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. And it all comes straight to your door in one specially insulated box.
So, how'd you do?
Normally I'm fairly useless in the kitchen.
Yeah, I know.
I can hardly tell the difference between a saucepan and a saucer, but HelloFresh has made a new man out of me, extracting talents that I never knew that I had. With the help of easy-to-understand instructions, I not only prepared my own fancy meal with the freshest ingredients, it was also friggin' delicious.
That's pretty hard to believe.
I'm still marveling as to how I could do such a thing. When I made my first ever beef bulgogi bowls.
A bulgogi what?
It's a HelloFresh Hall of Fame recipe, by the way. I couldn't get over how this scrumptious meal was prepared by my own hands. I admit, I was a little nervous at first. I mean, what if I mess this up? The photo of the bulgogi bowl on the recipe card looked kind of exotic and intimidating and seemed like a big leap for a guy whose most impressive dish to date was cereal con leche. But I have to say, it was very easy to make and tasted absolutely delicious. In under half an hour, I had the best home-cooked meal I've had in ages.
Well, sounds super simple. Fresh, pre-measured ingredients with easy-to-follow six-step recipe cards with pictures. So, HelloFresh makes conquering the kitchen a real possibility. Even for a culinary dunce like you with deliciously simple seasonal recipes. Can you really get an amazing new recipe every week?
Yep. And did I mention it was a lot of fun to make? HelloFresh makes cooking enjoyable and, thank goodness, easy. Oh, and there's three plans to choose from. Classic, veggie, and family. You can even switch between them when the mood strikes you. I mean, do what I did and get out of that limited recipe rut of cereal for dinner and start cooking outside of your comfort zone by discovering delicious new recipes. I'm so glad that I did.
And get this, Fireside Mystery Theater listeners, you can get $80. That's right, $80 off your first month of amazing HelloFresh meals when you go to HelloFresh.com/Fireside80 and enter promo code Fireside80.
That's HelloFresh.com/Fireside80. Enter promo code Fireside80. It's like receiving 8 meals free. Awesome.
I'm glad to hear you're trying new things and haven't burned your house down in the process. Now, my friends, back to the Band of Mercy.
Nellie!
You're standing in my way, Mr. Adamson.
Nellie, please, you can't go in there right now.
I don't care, Mr. Adamson. As my editor, if you can't give me an adequate explanation as to why my story about the Band of Mercy was butchered beyond belief, I'd like to have the audience of Mr. Pulitzer himself.
Nellie, don't. Don't go in there. You're making a mistake. He's in there with...
Hi, Mr. Pulitzer. Governor Flower.
Ugh, Nellie, Bly, Vi, you!
That's all right, Mr. Pulitzer. Nellie Bly, I've always wanted to meet you, Miss Bly. Such an honor.
Oh, the honor is mine, Governor Flower. I apologize for interrupting your meeting.
Nonsense, you didn't interrupt anything. Did you know, Miss Bly, that I always look forward to reading every one of your articles? It's the only reason I subscribe to this rag called the New York World. You know I'm just teasing, Joseph.
I know. Miss Bly, I was in the middle of a meeting with Governor Flower. He's being much more gracious than he needs to be. What gives you the right to barge
Joseph,
in here?
Joseph, old chum, I said it's all right. I was being sincere. I might as well tell her.
Tell me what?
Ugh, she doesn't need to know, Governor.
No, actually, I think her sudden appearance is quite fortuitous. Pure kismet.
This is most awkward.
If I knew it was possible all along to just meet with you face to face, I would have just told you myself directly.
Oh, boy. Here it comes.
Your story about the Band of Mercy was brought to my attention. A solid piece of reporting. Crackerjack storytelling. Much of it accurate and well-researched.
Much of it.
Some things in your original story, I must admit, regrettably, were nothing short of libelous.
Libelous?
Yes, libelous. As in lawsuit. You know what a lawsuit is, don't you, Miss Bly?
Yes, libelous to persons connected and well known to me. Persons that I readily admit live in a deluded fantasy world of their own, but persons I must still nonetheless protect from further shame and scandal. You do understand where I'm coming from, don't you, Miss Bly?
Yes, Governor
Mr.
Flower.
Mr. Pulitzer and your editor, Mr. Adamson, were kind enough to let me review the proofs before they went to press. And we made a few changes. Truncations, if you will. But be cheerful, my dear. Aside from a few minor compromises, I think it's still the garish curio piece that you set out to compose in the first place.
But it hardly makes any sense now.
And what does? Joseph, old chum, thank you for your time. I expect I'll see you at the club this month.
Absolutely, Governor. But before you leave, may I tempt you? I have these all the way from Havana. Shall we enjoy a smoke?
Well, doggone it, Joseph. You sure know how to drive a spike through a rail. How could I say no to such a thing? Sure, I'll drop anchor for a bit longer.
Miss Bly, you may leave now and close the door behind you.
This was a crushing defeat for the great Nellie Bly. I am doubtful it added any comfort, but I tried to tell her that she was not alone. Anyone who has spent long enough time in a newsroom has seen it happen before. But I think this was perhaps the one time where it truly struck poor Nellie to the ground. She really knew it all along, but she was painfully reminded every now and again what power and money wants. Power and money often gets. One struggles to maintain a buoyance of integrity in a sea of corruption. No, the institutions of power and influence never make it easy. Their demand to wrest the pen from the hand of the author so that they have final authorship of a narrative that will later be passed off as the truth is the bitterest pill of all for a journalist to swallow. Especially for a legacy of truth seekers like Nellie Bly. You see, she knew at that time it was pointless to press any further about the Band of Mercy, as they were called. Especially once her eyes fixed upon the cravat worn by Governor Flower. A cravat bearing the image of a large blue eye against a golden background. But the truth will out, as they say, as each of you bear witness to that now.
Stay home, Joe, she cried. There's a picnic too at the old Point View. It's a shame it rained today. Then the boy drew near, wiped away each tear, and she heard him softly say, wait till the sun shines, Nellie, and the clouds go drifting by. We'll be so happy, Nellie. Don't you cry.
Wasn't that lovely? That's right. Wait till the sun shines again, Nellie. That was a popular song in our day, you know. I would often hum the melody to her when I noticed her spirits were low. And in the later years, I'm sad to say her spirits were not always the highest. Maybe she made enemies of the wrong people, who knows? But by the time she passed, on January 27th, 1922, she had lived long enough to see her legacy more or less reduced to a footnote. And you know what, folks? Enough time has passed. It's time everyone truly knew. I've been waiting for it for quite a long time now, but it still remains to be seen. Can you believe it? There is really nothing left to commemorate the name of the trailblazer who was Nellie Bly. Not in New York City, not anywhere, really. A street name for her, a statue, an award given in her name. They could turn her home into a museum and a place to honor and inspire brave folks like Nellie who dare to reach for the impossible. No. None of those things have come to pass. It pains me that they have not, but I remain hopeful that someday they shall. Perhaps you, yes, you, could do something to correct this oversight, to make sure the spirit of Nellie Bly fights on, perseveres, and prevails in the quest to tell the whole story. In the meantime, come on, folks. Come say it with me. Three cheers for Nellie Bly. Hip, hip! And before we part, there's a fine fellow waiting here in the wings to read you a fine bit of verse. Can we have a warm welcome for Dr. David Linton? This is Arthur Brisbane signing off. Thank you, Mr. Brisbane. Just the facts, ma'am. When TV was in black and white, there was a show on Thursday night called Dragnet. A character named Joe Friday, every episode was heard to say, a line we can't forget. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. And then John Lennon wrote a song and asked us all to sing along. His little tune became an anthem, a challenge to the reigning bunkum, a plea for open minds and hearts against what keeps us all apart. John Lennon sang, all I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. And yet today it's sad to say we have to hope and even pray to get some facts and basic truth from those within the broadcast booth. Now the news just makes us worry as from CNN to Fox we scurry in hope of comfort or at least distraction from all that robs us of satisfaction. Is it real or is it fake? We only want a little break from gore and tales of global strife that contaminate our daily life. Fake news gives us the blues. How can we choose what's true? We once had reporters who seemed to be reliable sorters of truth from fiction. They'd share with us stories of crisis and worries, all told with immaculate diction. There were some in the model of Nellie Bly who examined things with an open eye, who tried to follow her example, whose integrity was strong and ample. Like Nellie Bly, they dug right in to tell it straight, without a spin. Team Huntley and Brinkley took turns every evening to report Vietnam as the nation was grieving, while Woodward and Bernstein won a Pulitzer Prize for cutting a president down to size. Jimmy Breslin covered the city. He covered it all, both ugly and pretty. The Village Voice once offered a choice, but no more. Now it's all babble for 24/7 as we no longer wait for news at 11. As we tune in each night to see what's on the cable, it stifles all talk at the dining room table. Rachel and Chris give us pundits galore, and we watch endless droning from the U.S. Senate floor. Limbaugh and Breitbart feed us reasons for hating, to build up new ways to increase their rating. And yet, despite our separate creeds, we're bound by some abiding needs for truth that we can all believe in, for facts that live beyond PR spin. So let's raise a toast to Murrow and Cronkite. They gave us straight news in our homes every weeknight. For truth is found where least expected, in dreams that keep us all connected. There seems to be just one solution to the never-ending news pollution. Take in hand the remote control and reassert your rightful role. If it makes you want to scoff, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off.
And that was The Band of Mercy. Arthur Brisbane was played by David Linton. Mrs. David was played by Mary Murphy. Officer Joseph Connolly was played by Michael Pate. Adamson was played by James Reeser. Mrs. Ewan was played by Casey LaForest. Ben Van Orden was played by Eric David Gislason. Joseph Pulitzer was played by Alan LaForest. Governor Roswell P. Flower was played by James Kleinman. And the part of Nellie Bly was played by me, Ali Silva. The song Wait Till the Sun Shines, Nellie, by Andrew B. Sterling, was performed by Martina Da Silva, accompanied by Nico Slater. The poem Just the Facts, Ma'am, was written and performed by David Linton. The Band of Mercy was written by Silben Sandovar and directed by Holly Payne Strange. Thanks to HelloFresh for supporting this episode. Don't forget, you can get a whopping $80 off your first month of HelloFresh meals when you go to HelloFresh.com/Fireside80 and enter code Fireside80. More from The Secret Files of Nellie Bly was produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and me for Fireside Mystery Productions. Our musical score is improvised and performed by Nico Slater. Our sound effects designer and engineer is Joe Young. Our technical director at the Slipper Room is Johnny Goddard. Our production assistant is Brontes Shane Orengo. Jason Graves composed our theme music, and I manage our audio post-production. Just like our inspiring Ms. Bly, the small band of storytellers and audio drama makers of Fireside Mystery Theater work very hard to bring you deliciously dark and delightful audio entertainment. But we need your help to sustain this creepy thing we love and to enable our Fireside Flames to grow. Consider becoming our very own Patreon patron. For a dollar or two or more a month, you could provide vital support for what we do and help us to achieve our future goals. In exchange, we have some special perks for our Patreon patrons. How about a postcard from Sunken Harbor? Exclusive discounts on our merch? A personalized audio thank you from one of our fabulous cast members? A classy limited edition lapel pin? We have perks for all different monthly sustainer levels. Check them out and become an FMT Patreon patron today by going to patreon.com/firesidemysterytheater or just follow the link from our website. As ever, we are so grateful for any support you give to help us keep the embers of our fireside flickering. If you haven't already, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Fireside Mystery. Go on and like us on Facebook too and stay up to date with all things FMT. When we were last in the town of Sunken Harbor, some troubling things started to happen with a strange batch of strawberries and some cursed clay. Sounds pretty weird, huh? Well, trust me, it's only gonna get weirder. Book a trip for our next journey to our favorite enchanted town, Sunken Harbor, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. We'll be taping live on Sunday, April 28th at 5 p.m. at the Slipper Room. Tickets are on sale now at slipperroom.com or follow the link from our website. Be sure to catch up with our past Sunken Harbor episodes to get you in the mood. Coming up next from Fireside Mystery Theater, we aren't the only creepy gig in town, ladies and gentlemen. Be on the lookout for episodes from our most recent live performance, All Night Radio. Our time with Ms. Nellie Bly has come to a close, for now, but we hope to encounter her yet again before too long. She is a courageous taker of risks, to be sure. But even one as brave as our Ms. Bly knows, it is always best to mind the shadows.